Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 11th of February. In this hour of the program, we're going to be talking about recalls, big names in the auto industry, companies that people thought were very, very wonderful makers of cars and made cars that were quite safe, Toyota, and a little bit of news from Honda in the last couple days as well. Toyota's recalls have affected over 9 million U.S. cars, and Honda added close to 400,000 U.S. autos for their airbags in the last couple days. This is obviously affecting Toyota. They have ads all over television apologizing for their cars. First person I wanted to speak with after the news broke about Toyota's acceleration problems was Ralph Nader, and we have him with us today for part of the show. I immediately thought, as I'm sure many of you did, of Unsafe at Any Speed, published in 1965. It took the auto industry to task for producing unsafe vehicles. And you'll remember that General Motors hired private detectives to harass Ralph Nader and then publicly apologized before a nationally televised Senate committee hearing. He went on to create a number of agencies that examined health and safety, Public Citizen. In 1970, he established the Center for Auto Safety. He's the author of a number of other books, including most recently Only the Super Rich Can Save Us. He will be joining us for some of the show, and a little bit later, Todd Lassa, who's Detroit editor of Motor Trend Magazine, who I believe is at the auto show right now in Chicago, will be joining us as well. Well, welcome phone calls. Get your phone calls in early for Ralph Nader because we won't have a whole lot of time with him. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Hello, Ralph Nader. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Have your phone lines been flooded? Because you're immediately the person I thought of. Ralph Nader, we got to talk to him about what's going on here, because that book was such a powerhouse.
Yes, and of course, the struggle for safe automobiles never ends, and the auto companies, to put it in a broader context, Kathleen, have had a lot of trouble over the years with sticking throttles. I recall a gigantic recall in 1971 by General Motors of Chevrolets and other cars, 6.1 million,
ooh,
because of a sticking throttle that hurled the vehicles into abutments and stores and trees. It was really a pretty bad scene, but GM had to recall them and fix the engine mount problem that was the cause. But now, you see, you have electronic throttles, and these electronic throttles are being given more and more work to do, not just dealing with the gas pedal, but dealing with fuel efficiency, etc. And Toyota was too little too late, and they knew about this problem in 2004 worldwide, not just in the U.S., and they fiddled and faddled with it, and they weren't really pressed on by the Department of Transportation's Auto Safety Agency in Washington, which dickered and opened six investigations and closed them without any action between 2004 and now. But now it's, of course, headlines, and the Department of Transportation's moving urgently, and Toyota's moving urgently. But starting last year, in about November, Toyota said it was a floor mat problem.
Yes.
And they recalled large numbers of cars. And then they started admitting in recent weeks that it could also be a mechanical problem. And now more and more engineering experts in the U.S. are saying that it could also be quite seriously an electronic problem with software glitches and with all these microprocessors and chips, etc. It's really a problem that's going to affect a lot of auto companies. It just happens that Toyota is on the front burner at the present time. But they've got to own up to the electronic throttle problem and stop talking about the floor mat, which was sort of a ruse that tried to get it over the hump, which, of course, did not occur. So now we got to get these cars recalled. The kits have to be sent to all the dealers. People have to bring their cars back. And the cars have different fixes depending on the models. And we don't know yet from Toyota the full story, which is why our Department of Transportation should use its subpoena power to get that full story, along with the congressional investigations that are underway.
So do you suspect then, from what you just said, that there will be a number of different auto companies because of the way that the electronics are used in cars now that already know they have similar problems and that they'll be called to task soon?
Well, I would expect there be more recalls by other manufacturers in the near future because they have the same technology, often the same suppliers, it's something that begs for independent testing by the government, independent analysis, because you can't rely on an auto company, which is very embarrassed when they have recalls, to own up to its problems, A, fast enough, and B, thoroughly enough in terms of the exact technical defects that's an issue.
Right. It's hard for me to understand, though, Ralph, why a company, because now look what it's going to do to their business. Once they knew there was a problem, what were they thinking? They weren't going to get caught?
Well, first of all, there are transition problems at the top of Toyota in terms of their top officials. That sort of disrupted the rhythm. And second, Toyota was rapidly expanding all over the world. I mean, really rapid, which meant that it had to get more suppliers, it had to get more of these electronic throttles, and it lost control of its quality control. Its goal was to exceed GM as the world's number one manufacturer, which it is now, with sales last year of about $280 billion. It's a real giant. So it lost control of its quality control, and then it was very embarrassed because, you know, it was the gold standard for quality
right.
control. IBM and Boeing would go to Toyota factories in Japan to learn quality control, which Toyota, by the way, learned from a scientist, quality control person in the U.S., Mr. Deming, Edward Deming, who was not responded to when he brought his quality control practices to Detroit many years ago. So it's a real irony here. But anyway, with that worldwide number one reputation for quality, they were not candid because they didn't want to fall. And so they covered up, essentially, and then they gave the wrong diagnosis, as if it was a floor mat problem. But now they know they're in the soup, and now they know they've got to come clean. And the government in Washington and the two congressional committees, I think, will assure that. As far as the motorist on the highway with these recalled models that haven't been fixed yet, just mentally practice, you know, turning the ignition off and squeezing the brake, just so if it does happen, you can react quite quickly. If you have any problem with your accelerator, immediately take it to the dealer. You'll clearly be put to front of the line.
Oh, I would imagine. Do you see any similarities at all to unsafe at any speed to 1965 when you took on the auto industry?
Yes, eternal vigilance by the public, the government, consumer groups, Congress is the only way to ensure motor vehicle design and construction safety and adopting better and better practices. So the competition does some of it. Obviously, the Japanese competition prodded Detroit. But overall, you have to have an external mandatory safety standard to protect the public and a mandatory recall that is effectuated by the government, which has been very reluctant to do so in recent decades. They've been a patsy for the industry.
The National Highway Safety Administration has been complaining that they haven't had enough money to do their job. They don't have enough inspectors. The number is very, very low. Are there agencies that are way understaffed, Ralph, that need to be better staffed for our protection?
Yes, that's the hidden secret in Washington. They have all these safety agencies, the FAA and the Federal Railroad Administration, the Food and Drug Administration, and OSHA and auto safety. Their budgets are ridiculously small compared to the bloated military budget, which is one half of the federal government's operating expenditures. I'll give you an example. This year, the Obama administration will spend $775 million guarding the embassy in Baghdad, Iraq. $775 million. The motor vehicle and highway safety component of NHTSA in the Department of Transportation, that is the agency that does, the part of the agency that does the research, issues the standards, enforces the law, is about $160 million. And there are over 40,000 lives and hundreds of thousands of injuries right here in America that agency is supposed to be dealing with. So you see the priorities?
Right.
They're terrible. In fact, guarding the embassy in Iraq, in Baghdad, at $775 million can compare with OSHA's budget, the Occupational Safety and Health Agency, which deals with 60,000 workplace-related deaths a year and many injuries and sicknesses. That entire budget is just over $500 million compared to $775 million to guard the embassy in Baghdad. So out of all this Toyota situation, Toyota will come out a better company. It's got huge reserves and very good scientists and engineers, so it'll straighten out its quality control more. I hope this tragedy, which involved deaths and injuries, of course, on the highway from these throttles, I hope it will give a higher visibility and support for NHTSA's mission and budget, the Auto Safety Agency and Department of Transportation. And that has to come from Congress. So Congress will be educating itself in the next few weeks with these hopefully thorough hearings where they're going to have Toyota executives and engineers up for cross-examination. Mm-hmm.
Let's go to some phone calls for Ralph Nader. Jeff from Winneconne is first. Hi, Jeff.
Ralph Nader, unbelievable. You're the one that took on all the companies years ago, and I trust you totally. This is the story. I've noticed 4 weeks ago that Toyota overpassed Ford and GM, and now all of a sudden Toyota is getting attacked. This just sounds like a conspiracy to me. Like you said, GM and Ford are going to have the same problems. They use the same parts. This is obvious.
I think he's referring to the $1,000 discount that,
right,
GM is offering the people who take their Toyota in for a trade-in for a GM car. Yeah, I mean, they're taking a little advantage of it. All these companies do. They don't want to be too blatant about it because it may be their turn next, right? But I think Toyota's problem is a real problem. It's not the U.S. companies ganging up on Toyota. I mean, they have a problem with their 2010 Priuses in Japan itself, which they are recalling for brake problems. One of the fixes, by the way, is an electronic brake override, which they ought to be more candid and tell the motorists, the owners of Toyota, that that is also what they're doing, not just a little steel shin that they're putting in the area of the gas pedal.
Linda from Pewaukee, hi. Hello, Linda.
Hello.
Hi, go
thank
ahead.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Thank you for your work, Mr. Nader. I just want to say that I have a 2008 Prius, and a while ago I got a notification about the floor mat, which I was pretty skeptical of. It just, you know, didn't seem to make a lot of sense. I didn't pay too much attention to it because my car seemed to be fine. And then all these other issues came up, so I thought, well, I'll call the dealership and see what they want me to do. And their answer was pretty vague. They were just saying something like, well, we don't really know what we're going to do with that yet. That's not part of this recall. We'll contact you. So I guess I'm still not really sure if there's anything wrong with my car or if there could be something. And it seemed like it wasn't a very good answer.
Well, there's for the cars that are being recalled, you're supposed to be getting a certified letter from Toyota and giving you an appointment when you go down to the dealer to have it fixed. And the newspapers have been pretty good about listing the exact models of Camrys, etc., that are being recalled. So, and if you can't get the newspaper, if you look at NHTSA's website, they will tell you that in considerable detail, and NHTSA has a 1-800 number hotline as well. So there are ways for you to find out. And if you're not in the category of recall, you shouldn't be that worried about it. But if you find any problem with your gas pedal, just go right down to the dealer. Don't wait for an appointment.
Right. Thanks for the call. Here's an email from John from Milwaukee. Ralph, do you think that anything special should be done to prove the safety of these vehicles before they go into mass production?
Yes, the government does. The Department of Transportation has never issued a comprehensive mandatory safety standard for gas pedals, and especially with the electronic throttle becoming more and more prominent. So they've got to do that. The second thing is, when the government asks Toyota, the federal government asks Toyota for information, and they get all these engineering documents, they don't have a testing protocol to provide a standard as to whether they think Toyota is doing the right job. So they don't have a testing protocol. So they've got to do a lot there. Secretary of Transportation Ray LaHood is right on it, finally, after about 8-9 months in the first part of 2009, when NHTSA, in his department, the Auto Safety Agency, was not coming clean. It didn't have a leader. Obama took a year to put a agency chief in charge, and he happens to be David Strickland, who is regarded quite highly by consumer groups. So now they have a leader, but for 11 months they had no leader. I mean, what kind of priority thinking does the White House have here? They're so oriented toward Iraq and Afghanistan, etc., when there are hundreds of thousands of lives in this country, and occupational safety hazards and disease and motor vehicles and hospital malpractice and hospital-induced infections and air pollution that can be saved. We have to pay attention to the American people's safety and health here.
What did you make of Ray LaHood's comments about don't drive these cars and then an hour later correcting himself?
That was a grammatical slip.
Was
he said, don't drive your car and take it to your Toyota dealer. And, of course, the press jumped on the first part of the sentence. He quickly said he misspoke.
Let's take one more call for you. Tom from Burlington. Hi.
Good morning. My brother, Pat, Charles A. Pat Boyle, is the little attorney that was involved in the Chevy Mobile scandal when they were putting, General Motors was putting the Chevrolet engines in Oldsmobile cars, and then they were charging premium prices for it. Then he sued them again when they put the little mini Chevette transmissions in Cadillacs, and he sued them. And then now he's involved in the case. He got this from Johnny Cochran out in California before he died. A lady had a Mitsubishi, and the electricity was going off. She had rented the car and called him up and said, my electricity is going off, and I want a new car. And then that night, the electricity stopped, and she was killed, and two other people were killed in the car when the electricity completely went off. And then they took the car, and instead of impounding it as evidence, Philip Corboy's law firm had the car shredded. But so it's an ongoing battle here. And now they have the sticker on the cars that said this car was built in a General Motors factory someplace, and that's because my little brother, he was 24 when he sued them. My question is, how many people have actually died now before they finally got around to doing something about this problem?
Well, the suspected number is 19 fatalities in the United States. It could be higher, and uncounted number of injuries. Many more crashes with at moderate speeds, bumps, etc. But we don't have really good information beyond that. There are lawsuits filed which represent the next of kin of those who lost their lives. So some of the data comes from that. But I think the government is using a figure of 19 fatalities so far. The real scare is whether there is emerging electromagnetic interference phenomena itself. So when you have these electronic, very complex software, they are being affected in the amount of electromagnetic environment, electronic technology. The government, there will be a lot more research about it.
Yeah. this is from the foreword to Unsafe at Any Speed, the introduction. You talk about physicians picketing for safe auto design at the New York International Auto Show in April of 1965. Their unprecedented action, the measure of their desperation over the inaction of the men in institutions in government and industry who have failed to provide the public with the vehicle safety to which it is entitled. Much has happened since you started all of that with your book. Are things a whole lot better right now?
That was a cold April morning. I remember that one, Kathleen.
Do you really?
Things are much better. First of all, cars are much safer in crashes. They have airbags, they have seatbelts, padded dash panels, side protection, head restraints, collapsing steering columns, etc. Their brakes and tires are clearly better than they were in the 60s. Stability problems still occur with SUVs, for example. But by and large, here are the results. In 1965, when my book came out, there was no federal motor vehicle and highway safety regulation of the auto companies, and there were 5.6 deaths per 100 million vehicle miles traveled. 5.6 statistical deaths per 100 million motor vehicles traveled in the U.S. Last year, it was 1.4.
Hmm.
From 5.6 to 1.4.
Yeah.
One of the great successes. We could do better. We could have done better with stronger enforcement under various presidents, but think of the progress.
Right.
Think of the lives saved. I lost a lot of my high school, college, law school friends in crashes.
Mm.
People today are not experiencing that level of tragedy. And there's great future innovations that are very, very future, I say, that haven't been put in your car yet, but they're ready to go from the many automotive suppliers to develop collision avoidance systems and to dramatically reduce that number even further.
Mm. Can you walk outside in Washington today?
No, Washington is snowbound, and, you know, it's not really, it relies on the sun for plowing snow sometimes. A quarter of the trucks clearing the snow are disabled. They don't know where to put the snow, so the pedestrians can't cross because the snow is piled up on thoroughfares on the sides of the roads. Those of us from wintry climes like New England or Wisconsin are constantly astonished at the inability of our national capital to clear the roads in what are not fantastic snowstorms. It's a big snowstorm, but nothing Wisconsin hasn't experienced often.
Thank you. We do look at you and say, hey, we know how to get through this. Well, at least the sun has many purposes, as we've also written about, right? Thank you, Ralph Nader, so much for being with us.
You're welcome, Kathleen. Thank your listeners.
Ralph Nader, our guest, the first part of this program, we thought of him because of his really important book in 1965, Unsafe at Any Speed. He brought up a number of issues for future shows, too. Cars that could be much better at collision avoidance. That caught my ear. Have to look into that. We're continuing our conversation. We're talking about what's been happening with Toyota, affecting 9 million cars in the United States. Honda adding close to 400,000 U.S. autos to their recall list because of the airbags that when they go off, they can create injury and possibly death. And Ralph Nader says that it's just a matter of time because of all of the electronic problems here that are causing these brake problems that before other cars will be brought to our attention as having similar problems. We just changed guests, same topic, phone line still open. Number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining us for the next part of the program, he has been with us before, Todd Lassa, Detroit editor of Motor Trend magazine. He is currently at the auto show in Chicago. Hi, Todd. Thanks very much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Hi.
Good to be here.
How are things at the auto show?
It's a fairly slow one this year compared with previous years. The Detroit show, which was a month ago, has always been a bigger show and showed some signs of let's say recovery, but the Chicago show just had a few introductions yesterday. Of course, that remains the biggest show for consumers in the country, but in terms of the press days, a little bit light this year.
Right. Ralph Nader was just saying it's probably just a matter of time before other makers of cars are going to say, hey, we've got electronic problems as well, or consumers of those cars will point to problems because of the way cars are made now. Do you agree?
Not entirely. I think that, you know, there are many more complex electronic systems being added to the cars almost daily to all brands. They're tested very thoroughly. They are, in most cases, they are robust. I don't think you can say that because Toyota has this problem with sticking throttles or with the regenerative brakes on the Prius that every car company will experience the same thing. That said, regen braking is a kind of new technology for cars, and Ford has also issued a recall for the high. It's actually a technical service bulletin for the hybrid Fusion, because they believe that some customers may be not used to the way the brakes feel on those hybrid cars.
Hmm. So there's something about, tell me more about what the problems are with hybrid. What's the technology that's creating that problem?
Well, you know, this is a technology used to improve fuel economy.
Oh.
And basically what you have is an electric system that uses the energy from braking to recharge the battery, so that when you're driving a hybrid, you typically have better fuel mileage around town, because if the battery's charged up, when you come to a stoplight or a stop sign, the engine will shut down, and you'll just be running on the electric, the hybrid electric motor, and that'll run your air conditioning or your heater and your radio and so on. And then the engine starts up after you reach a certain, 25 miles per hour, usually less actually than that. But this is a system to help improve fuel mileage, and that switches between the conventional mechanical brakes, depending on your brake needs, and it should happen in a very quick period of time. The transition should be milliseconds, but the system apparently, and it's really very technical, and maybe our technical director at Motor Trend would probably do a better job of explaining this, but I mean, technically it should make that transition very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And over certain pavement, over potholes, that sort of thing, the brake can feel kind of strange if you have this transition happen at the wrong time. That's what we know so far, and so far that has affected only the new Toyota Prius, which the third generation model came out last year as a 2010 model. You had a caller who spoke of her 2008 Prius. So far, the only the floor mat recall apparently has affected her Prius. There's evidence that Toyota suspected a problem with regen braking on the previous Priuses, and she may get a recall notice eventually. But at this point, her car hasn't been recalled.
I see. So many people, as you well know, drive Toyotas, and they drive them for a long time because they've been thought of to be a very, very reliable car and one that will last a long period of time. We were interested in this Kelley Blue Book survey. 27% of potential car buyers who were considering a Toyota prior to the recall no longer looking to buy a Toyota. Declines were also seen for the Scion and the Lexus brands. And those who are leaving Toyota, that survey found that 49% said that they are not sure they will consider buying from the automaker again.
That's quite damning, actually. It's quite a turnaround, because Toyota has mishandled this issue for the last several months at least, and it has a lot to do with, I think, the fact that although Toyota has a huge presence in the United States, operates several factories, has a lot of American employees, both in the offices, running the sales division, and developing new models and so on. They have engineers here. They have factories with blue collar workers. Despite all that, really the company is still controlled out of Japan. And you have to wait for the head of the corporation basically to respond to this. And they have kind of a different system in Japan for issues like this. And I think you know, waiting for Akio Toyoda, the grandson of the founder who's running the company in Japan, to wait for him to respond, it came way too late.
And he's going to be before these congressional hearings when, in a few weeks?
You know, I don't think that's even clear yet. I mean, they were supposed to, they were supposed to have the hearings earlier, and the snowfall in Washington that Ralph Nader was talking about has created some delays. I think it would probably be within a few weeks. I don't know that they're going to find out a lot, frankly. I mean, Toyota has, in the past, issued TSBs, technical service bulletins, and fixed cars without issuing a recall. Now, every car company has recalls, and I think they should have learned, perhaps, that that Americans are used to that now, because cars are so complex that even the best quality cars, you have a good chance that there may be a recall on something, and or at least a technical service bulletin, and they should have opened this up earlier, no question.
Right. So what's happening with other companies? They must be secretly, dare I say this, happy that Toyota is, not because of problems related to injury or anything, but their business certainly is going to go up. Who's benefiting from all of this, and what are they saying at the auto show kind of quietly about what's happening to this huge car maker?
Well, even quietly, they're not, I wouldn't agree that they're not saying that. Even quietly, two journalists, Mark Royce, the president of General Motors in North America, yesterday said, no, we want to win customers on our own merits. We don't want to win, you know, based on the troubles of Toyota. Just as, you know, obviously Toyota climbed to the top a few years ago with General Motors, you know, kind of flailing and having, you know, problems with not having the best product. But the quality of cars, because of the way cars are built, everything, the quality gap between Toyota and the competitors had really narrowed quite a bit over the last 10 years. If you look at all the surveys, Consumer Reports, J.D. Power, and all the other independent surveys, the difference in quality was much tighter than it had been in the past. On top of that, again, we're talking about all this complexity, a lot of new electronic systems, and a lot of these made to add convenience to the buyer, make it easier for the driver to drive the car, and B, to make it safer. And there's just so much complexity that it's hard to keep up with the way that the technology is advancing. And, so I don't think any automaker really wants to see this happen to Toyota because of, you know, what Ralph Nader said, that it could happen to them,
right.
And they know that.
But they're also offering $1,000 GM for the Toyota that you bring in, right?
That's true. I think that those promotions probably, you know, were in place, you know, before the latest recalls. Obviously, the format problem, which was kind of a knee-jerk reaction on Toyota's part, that was ongoing. But that seemed like a small problem when GM and Ford were, kind of baking these incentives. I think they just wanted to sell more cars, and not not based on Toyota quality perception problems, but based on the idea that they had raised their quality to Toyota level, if not just near Toyota level, at least.
Let's go to phone calls for you. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Feel free to send an email. That address is talk@wpr.org, and our guest is Todd Lassa, Detroit editor of Motor Trend magazine. We go first to William from Sun Prairie. Hi, William.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. First of all, I want to mention out, it was a little bit comical in a way that when Ralph Nader was on, hello?
Yes, we hear you.
When he was on, he was talking about the electrical, and I told your screener that the radio kept going off and on and off, you know. The signal, well, they were jerking his chain, Rolf's chain. But anyway, I have a Toyota, okay? And I got a steering relay rod replacement recall. This is from the years 90 through 95. Now, I got this 2 years ago, 18 years after the fact, and it states that under certain conditions, steering and everything like that, the steering rod may fracture, causing the vehicle to lose ability to be steered, controlled, and may cause an accident. That took 18 years or, you know, something like that before they finally got on it. Now, what's your take on the karma? The Swedes, you know, they made that Volvo that was really great. Now they are getting into, and they claim it's the best hybrid. It's being made in Sweden, Finland, and in California.
All right, what's your take on that, Ted?
Well, on his steering rod problem, yeah, I mean, you know, some of these problems are discovered later. It may be, I'm not really familiar with that particular recall, but it's possible that was something that where the part deteriorated after age, and especially with weather, rust, whatever. I don't know. I'm guessing that may have been the case. Hybrids in Sweden, Finland, and California. I'm not sure what he's talking about there, but Volvo, you know, is looking at hybrids in the future. Most manufacturers, those selling cars in the United States, are looking at hybrids in the future. We're going to have the Chevrolet Volt unveiled or on sale by the end of the year this year, and that's actually an electric car with a range extender engine, so that you can drive it like a gas-powered car for a long range and yet mostly use electric power for the car. That's going to have a lot of new, let's say, space-age technology, a lot of stuff that we've never seen on the road before. So, you know, again, this gets back to the complexity, and it gets back to, you know, consumers are demanding cars that get better fuel mileage or don't use any fuel at all. And they also demand the safety and convenience that we've been used to for the last 20 or 30 years.
Mm. Isn't that amazing what you just said? Don't use any fuel at all.
Well, again, in the case of the, they all use power, of course, because you
right.
plug it in, and somewhere upstream, there's some power plant creating the electricity for your car.
Right,
but yeah, the idea of the Chevy Volt is that if you drive, say, 40 miles per day and keep, you know, plugging it in, you won't use a drop of gas potentially.
What's going on with Ford? Their sun seems to be rising, doesn't it?
Their sun seems to be rising. A lot of it has to do with the fact that Ellen Mullally, the CEO who came on board in 2006, came from Boeing, immediately borrowed a lot of money to keep Ford going while they were spending some of it on a lot of new product to update their things, their cars and their sport utilities. And they are now becoming a global company in that they've always had overseas operations, but the cars you'll buy, the Focus and the Fiesta that you'll be able to buy soon in the U.S. will be much closer, almost exactly like the European and Asian versions of the car. That on top of the fact that because they borrowed this money ahead of time at a very good interest rate, they didn't have to take any government loans, and so they've been doing pretty well this year. The 2010 Ford Fusion is Motor Trend's Car of the Year. We thought it was a very good car, and so yes, they're looking much better than they were a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls, more of them for Todd. Todd Lass is Detroit editor for Motor Trend Magazine. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Some lines are open right now. 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, that address, talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Ted Lassa, our guest. Our phone number now, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Carol from Oak Creek writes, in light of the safety problems at Toyota, if you don't mind answering this, Todd, if it's not too personal, although you're probably a guy who drives all kinds of cars, what kind of car do you drive? What cars do you consider safe? Thank you, Carol from Oak Creek.
My wife has a 2008 Mazda Miata, and it has a stick shift.
Great.
And frankly, you know, although I'm dubious about a lot of the unintended acceleration stories, you know, the one thing you can do with a stick shift is that if for some reason the throttle does stick, you can very easily put it into neutral and have control of the car. But that's also true of an automatic, and I should say that for your listeners in case they're worried about a problem with their Toyota or any other car. If you find that the car is accelerating and you don't want it to, that, you know, the way to regain control or keep control of it is to shift it into neutral. There's no reason the car shouldn't be able to shift into neutral. And then you're disengaging the engine from the wheels, and you know, the engine will keep running if there is a sticky throttle, but you know, you won't be powering the wheels, and you'll eventually slow down, and you should be able to use the brakes. The brakes, despite what a lot of people believe, should outpower the engine in any case.
Oh.
And I think there are a lot of people panicking. Frankly,
yes,
I mean,
sure.
You know, talk about how I drive a lot of different cars. I also drive in a lot of different conditions, sometimes on test tracks, sometimes on racetracks. And, you know, most people aren't used to, haven't experienced, you know, what I have driving cars at high speeds and having to control it and bring it to a slowdown or a stop or a corner or whatever in quick time. And I think that's a major factor here.
What are you doing on racetracks?
Well, I mean, you know, when we get to drive a new model that's out to fully test it in some cases, especially if it's a performance model, sometimes we'll have the use of a racetrack just to have a controlled situation and be able to drive at speeds that, you know, we wouldn't be able to drive on regular roads.
Mm-hmm. Whatever happened to stick shifts? Man, I remember everybody I knew, including me, drove stick shifts back in the 70s and the 80s. We thought it was fuel efficient, and mm-hmm. it was sort of the in thing to do.
Well, you know, I've both my wife and I very much prefer them. But, you know, frankly, with six-speed automatic transmissions, because now you have more sophisticated automatics, the fuel efficiency advantage is gone. Generally, a car that's offered with both a manual and an automatic, if it's the same engine, and if it's a six-speed automatic, your fuel mileage could be as good, if not better, than the stick shift. On top of it, people don't like to learn to drive that way. Most people prefer the convenience. It kind of bothers me because I think it also makes it easier for people to talk on the phone or text or do all sorts
You're
of things
right.
other than drive while they're driving their
You're
cars.
Right.
Because they've got an automatic transmission.
There you go. All should be manual transmissions. Then we'll take care of that whole problem.
I'm
right?
with you, but I think we've got a long way to go.
I think you're
the
right,
US,
Todd.
We probably sell 5% of cars are sold with manual gearboxes in the U.S. these days.
Let's go to Mike next from Milwaukee. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to talk about E85. One of the concerns or the issues or gripes, complaints I have is that we have, and this holds true for diesel, by the way, too, as well, but we have some really exciting vehicles that oftentimes are the same models that are sold in the U.S. that are available in, for example, the Scandinavian countries in Europe, in the case of some Saabs and Volvos, and in South America, where we have major manufacturers that sell the same platform in the U.S., have some E85 capabilities where the car is optimized to be able to use E85. They use smaller engines with turbochargers to take advantage of the high-octane capability of E85 so that where flex-fuel vehicles sold in the U.S., E85 hasn't been a big hit because the reduced energy content in E85, people suffer mileage and they think it's a wash and why am I going to bother with E85? However, if we had some of these vehicles, from what I understand from the world automotive press, is that by taking advantage of the physical capabilities of E85, you actually can have vehicles that get comparable mileage and have more performance than cars running on just straight gasoline, yet still have the ability to run on gasoline if you can't find an E85 pump. But the manufacturers here don't sell any of them in the U.S.
Todd?
Well, you know, I think really the problem is that gas is cheap in the U.S. It really is. Now, that doesn't sound like a problem to most people. We like that fact. But your caller's right, that E85, because of the energy content, if you put that in your car, and more manufacturers are offering more and more models that have that flexibility, and that will continue. But if you use E85 instead of conventional gasoline, your miles per gallon will go down. So you're paying more for it, and people don't like to pay more for gas. We saw what happened when gasoline hit $4 and $4.50 per gallon a couple of summers ago. What Europe really likes are diesels, and these are even more fuel efficient. They're also hard to clean up. We've heard of clean diesel engines, but the cost of making diesels clean. And again, you use much less fuel because the diesels are inherently have better fuel mileage, but the cost of that is just about equal to making a hybrid system for a car. People don't want to pay that in this country. We are the difference in price to buy a car in this country versus Western Europe, for example. It's huge, and that's one reason why in Western Europe people buy small cars with diesel engines, where we buy larger cars or SUVs with gas engines, because, you know, those smaller cars cost as much as large cars do here. It's just the difference in tastes. The added price of buying a car with a diesel engine in the U.S., most people wouldn't do it, because at only, you know, $2.65 a gallon, switching to diesel, it would take a long time to pay off that added cost of buying the diesel engine.
Some may say that it's more than a difference in taste. SUVs.
It's a difference in economics.
Yeah. And sort of this American, you know, drive the open roads and the mountains in my SUV, and how many of us do that, too. But it seems like we were sold that brand of car as well.
Well, you know, I mean, the American buyer, we like sport utilities for a while because you could put everything in them, and they had a certain image, and in Europe they like hatchbacks because you can carry a lot of things around in hatchbacks, but they tend to be smaller, cheaper cars,
right.
And in Europe they don't have the space in cities for sport utilities to park them. It's just quite a different lifestyle, and that's reflected in the cars and trucks we drive.
Thanks for your call, Mike. We go next to Paul from Sheboygan Falls. Hi, Paul.
Good morning. How are you?
All right, Paul. How are you?
Not too bad. I have
Good.
A question or a comment. Actually, a story. 2001 Honda CR-V. Year and a half ago, check engine light goes on. Obviously, it won't pass emissions. Take it to the car place. They tell me it's a $384 tune-up. So I pay that. Check engine light still stays on. They scope it again. Find out that it has cylinder problems, okay, like $2,200 worth of cylinder problems. That guy leans across the desk from and tells me that, hey, here's what you got to do. Call up or write a letter to Honda Corporation out of California. Tell them you're a loyal customer, which I was, still am. Tell them that you have this problem. I got it fixed, mailed them the receipts for the $2,200. They called me back and said, well, actually the dealer had told me that there wasn't enough of these submitted to have a recall, but they were aware of the problem. So they called me back and said, would you take $600? And they sent me a check for $600. Friends of mine said, should have held out for more. I was surprised at the car being, you know, 7-8 years old at the time that they even did anything. So I'm just curious, how often does that happen if you write them a letter or bring up a concern like that?
Well, I think that's very unusual. I don't think that happens very often, and often it is a fight between the customer and the manufacturer or the dealership. On the other hand, the fact that they did that is and may do that quietly in many cases may have been a contributor to the quality reputation that Honda and Toyota and some of the other manufacturers have versus, you know, what GM and Ford and Chrysler have been known for in the past.
And thank you very much for your call. We have time. No, we don't. What are you particularly struck by? What are you real anxious to get on the road that you've never driven before in about 15 seconds, Todd?
Oh, there's so much. So there's new stuff coming out. There's a new Audi A8 that should be interesting. There are plenty of sports cars I'd love to drive. Mm-hmm. You know, at the Chicago Auto Show here, again, it was a fairly light show in terms of introductions. Honda actually showed a minivan that, you know, everybody's been trying to make minivans sexier. And although I have no need for a minivan and wouldn't buy one, it'll be interesting to see whether when it comes out at the end of this year, whether it'll be as sexy as Honda is portraying.
The
styling
minivan
is better than most minivans.
Thanks, Todd, so much. Todd Lass, our guest this part of the show, Ralph Nader with us a little bit earlier to talk about recalls and cars. Thanks to Chrissy Peace for producing this hour, and thanks to Chrissy and Connor O'Brien for on-air production here in Milwaukee. News and Rhonda Fanning produced as well. News is coming up, and we'll return.